and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, March 9, 2021. South Sudan's holdout rebel groups meet in Kenya.
It is a recommitment to respect and adhere to cessation of hostilities. That's very important.
And the Vatican appoints a new bishop for Rumbek Diocese.
I feel happy that the Diocese of Rumbek have a bishop, so they will join the rest of the diocese, and then the work of God will progress and it will go ahead.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Representatives from the Transitional Government of National Unity and some holdout groups under the umbrella of the South Sudan Opposition Movements Alliance agreed to recommit to the cessation of hostility agreement signed in December 2019. The parties are meeting in the Kenyan town of Naivasha. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Yei.
Barnaba Marel Benjamin, head of the government delegation to the talks, says both sides agreed to cease violence, protect civilians, and allow humanitarian access across the country.
It is a recommitment to respect and adhere to cessation of hostilities. That's very important. Two, is to abstain from any form of violence against civilians, including sexual and gender-based violence, and duly investigate in a timely manner and hold those responsible to account. Number three, we agreed to grant unhindered and unconditional access to humanitarian assistance to all areas of the Republic of South Sudan.
In his opening remarks at the talks on Monday morning, Pagan Amum, leader of the Real SPLM, said he and Paul Malong, head of the South Sudan United Front, or SAF, are committed to ending South Sudan's conflict using peaceful means.
I would like to express our commitment as some, these two organizations here, SSUF and Real SPLM, that we come here with open hearts, with genuine commitment, to seek a real, genuine solution to the problem. We really want a solution to our problem. We want our country to be peaceful. We have a lot of resources. It is time for us to rebuild our broken lives. We cannot continue causing problems to ourselves and to the region and expect the region to spend all their time and resources in trying to solve our problem.
Mariel says the government and SOMA agreed to promote open communication and include SOMA representatives to the ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism and verification mechanism as a measure to guarantee the implementation of security arrangements.
We agreed to establish a channel of communication between SOMA and the CTSAM-VM up to the time of its full inclusion, the time when SOMA will be fully included into CTSAM structures. And we have also agreed to guarantee unfettered access for CTSAM-VM to monitor and verify compliance with the cessation of hostilities agreement. And finally, we also agreed to continue the political dialogue as a part of the ongoing peace process to address concerns and the root causes of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan in order to achieve a just, all-inclusive and sustainable peace.
It is not clear why General Thomas Rilo, who heads the National Salvation Front, a member of SOMA, is not attending the Naivasha talks. Wani Michael, a Juba-based civil society activist, welcomes the cessation of hostilities agreement but urges the government and mediators to ensure NAS leader Thomas Rilo is included in talks.
It's important to talk about peace, but the most important thing is they have to involve Thomas Rilo, has to be involved if you want to see genuine peace. They have to bring the real person on board, and that is Thomas Rilo has to be involved fully, because he's the one who has been having military confrontation between his troops and the government. And this is found in the CTSAM report.
Peace talks between the government and holdout groups began in 2019. The talks were adjourned in October last year after the parties could not reach agreement on the more contentious issues, including the root causes of the conflict. The talks are aimed at ensuring holdout groups join the revitalized peace deal signed in September 2018. The talks, facilitated by the Rome-based St. Egidio community in coordination with the Kenyan government, are expected to continue in Naivasha, Kenya through this Friday. The current session is focused on what caused the conflict. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
A representative of the Vatican in South Sudan announced Monday the appointment of a new bishop for the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek. While some Catholics in Rumbek have welcomed the appointment, others say they expected the coordinator of the Rumbek Diocese, who served as acting bishop for years, to be appointed as the new bishop. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
A letter issued yesterday by Monsignor Mark Kadima, the Chargé d'Affaires of the Vatican Embassy in South Sudan, says the Holy Father, Pope Francis, has appointed Reverend Father Christian Kalasa, the Vicar General of the Diocese of Malakal, as the new bishop of the Diocese of Rumbek. Reverend Father John Mathiang Machol, who has served as the diocesan coordinator for the Diocese of Rumbek for the past 8 years, says the Rumbek Diocese has not had a bishop for the last 10 years since Bishop Cesar Mazolari passed away in July 2011. Speaking by phone from Rumbek, Reverend Machol says he is glad his diocese finally has a bishop.
I feel happy that the Diocese of Rumbek have a bishop, so they will join the rest of the diocese, and then the work of God will progress and will go ahead. So I say thank you, people of God, for the time they have given me to serve them as a priest and as an administrator for this period. And now I'm happy that I will hand over to another person who will carry on with them, and I wish him the best.
Reverend Machol says he found it challenging to carry out some activities meant for bishops since he is not a bishop, but adds the diocese often received help from the nearby diocese of Malakal for activities such as ordaining priests. Machol says it is essential for every diocese to have a bishop.
The challenge is the lack of the bishop among the people of God also is a challenge, because when bishop is there, it is a symbol of the church present, the authority of the church present. And then we have been running the diocese for 8 years now without the bishop.
Catholic Nancy Amok attends the Sacred Heart Parish in Rumbek. She says she was excited to hear the Diocese of Rumbek was finally getting a bishop, but was hoping it would be a South Sudanese.
We feel very good because we have been having no bishop for the last 8 years. So we are very happy that we got a new bishop, no matter what he is, not our person from within South Sudan. But we feel happy that we received a new bishop in Rumbek Diocese, because we have been so lonely without a bishop.
Catholic John Madel of St. Joseph Parish in Quebec says he too is happy that the Diocese of Rumbek finally has a bishop, but says the congregants were expecting Father Mathiang to be appointed bishop of the Rumbek Diocese.
Very unfortunately, the appointment of bishop was delayed up to today. That the hopes of the majority on the ground here is that they were hoping the appointment of the Father John Mathiang, who is the coordinator of Rumbek Diocese, since bishop died. That whether the church, the arrangement of the church is different from any other arrangement, and that is why an Italian is appointed. But we don't mind.
Madel says he understands how the Catholic Church works and realizes the Pope can appoint any bishop he wants to lead the Rumbek Diocese. Catholic Andogwe Daniel, who attends St. Joseph Parish in Quebec, says he would have preferred Father Mathiang to be appointed bishop of the Diocese of Rumbek.
He has taken a long time as acting bishop, and he has been here since 2011 when the late bishop passed away, Mazzolario. So it has been a very big spirit of acting, you know, taking capacity of a bishop up now.
Still, Daniel says he welcomes the new bishop, Father Kalaska. The newly appointed bishop served as the assistant parish priest of Holy Trinity Parish in Old Fangak in 2006, then parish priest in 2007 at the same parish. In 2017, Father Kalaska was appointed vice provincial of the province of Komboni Missionaries in South Sudan. And in 2020, he was the Vicar General of the Diocese of Malakal. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Jonglei, where the Jonglei State High Court has sentenced a former radio station director to 10 years in prison for allegedly misappropriating tens of thousands of dollars given to the Borbe stations by donors. The court says the former radio executive must repay more than $69,000. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
In announcing the court's verdicts on Monday, presiding judge John Yella Leu said former Radio Jonglei director Malek Gunyin Gerwer was found guilty of criminal breach of trust, which included changing the radio station's ownership and misappropriations of its funds.
As a final judgment, based on the documents and the evidence that has been presented before this court, the court passes judgment as follows. The accused Malek Gunyin Gerwer to be convicted under Section 351 Penal Code Act 2008, convict Malek Gunyin to be sentenced into imprisonment for a term of 10 years as from today.
A criminal breach of trust is defined under South Sudan Penal Code Act 2008 as whoever being in any manner entrusted with the property or with any dominion over property dishonestly misappropriates or converts to his own use that property in violation of law or the terms of any trust. Judge Yell says Gunyin must also pay $69,356 and 186,868 South Sudanese pounds after misusing U.S. aid funds that were provided for constructing the station, buying new equipment, and paying staff salaries, which were not paid during Gunyin's time as administrator of Radio Jonglei 95.9 FM. Gunyin has also been ordered to hand over a five-door land cruiser vehicle and a deed for the land on which the station is located. Gunyin and his team have 15 days to appeal his conviction. Defense lawyer Aler Bot says the judgment was not fair and his client will appeal the verdict in Juba's Courts of Appeals.
The auditing that said to be done was done in Juba. The radio actually had not been audited. Now this is a controversial that the document for auditing, we dispute that document.
Tijua Kagwet is the current executive director of the radio station who was appointed by the Sudanese Christian Ministries Board of Directors. Agwet, who represented Radio Jonglei in court, said he welcomed the sentence but also expressed mixed feelings about the ruling.
I'm happy that the law has taken its course. But the only thing that I also mixed feeling, we have taken very many years working together with my brother, Malek Gunyin. I trusted him and he did the mistrust. Of course, now he has to be jailed. It's also painful because somebody has been a brother to you. We have been working together. But I think law has to do that because then somebody else does not also follow that. You have to be punished for what you have done.
Agwit says he brought the radio station to Bor in 2010 under Sudanese Christian Ministries and appointed Gunyin as his station manager. Agwit says Gunyin later changed the radio frequency from 95.9 FM to 89.7 FM and registered it as a community radio station unbeknownst to Agwit and other stakeholders in 2017 after USAID had already funded the construction of the radio and bought new equipment. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, U.S. marks 1 year of combating COVID-19. Stay tuned for that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. Like, it depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course, I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things. Because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we take a look at attempts by health workers to combat COVID-19 in the United States. Before COVID-19, the United States considered itself one of the best prepared countries in the world for a health crisis. The pandemic proved otherwise. 1 year into the crisis, more than 500,000 Americans have died. VOA Steve Baragona has more.
By early May of 2020, the United States had the largest percentage of people sick with COVID-19 of all the G7 industrialized countries. 1 year in, no one else is close. And the United States is third in deaths by population.
America's public health resilience has been shown to be an utter failure with COVID-19. You know, we're the richest country in the world and the poorest performer on a pandemic. That's inexcusable.
Costin says the U.S. public health system has been starved for funding and staff for years. It could not handle the load when the pandemic hit. But he and others place much of the blame on former President Donald Trump's administration.
It was a response that was not based on science, it was not well organized, and it did not communicate in a forthright way with the public.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it.
Promoting unreliable treatments, sidelining scientists, and politicizing basic prevention, experts accuse Trump of undermining America's response to the pandemic. Trump does get credit for investing in the fastest vaccine development in history, an effort starting to pay dividends. But since Joe Biden took over the presidency in January, top experts are visibly relieved.
And by comparison, this is night and day.
On day one, they released a plan. We didn't have a plan for a whole year, and it was a good plan.
The idea that you can get up here and talk about what you know, what the evidence, what the science is, and know that's it. Let the science speak. It is somewhat of a liberating feeling.
But the science says there is a long way to go. Infection rates are down, but dangerous variants are spreading. Vaccines are rolling out, but getting shots is difficult and riddled with racial inequalities. Vaccine hesitancy is declining, but still worryingly high. The virus is not going away anytime soon, but Gostin says it will get more manageable.
We're going to have to be vigilant. It's not going to be over, but we're going to learn to live with COVID-19. And we'll live with it, you know, reasonably well.
1 year down, maybe more to go. But experts say they may not be as bad. Steve Baragona, VOA News.
If you have questions or comments about any of the stories in today's program, please connect with me on Twitter. I'm at It's Steve Miller. And still to come.
After the pandemic hit and restaurants began to suffer, Valles and other women in the industry organized a food festival called Regarding Her, or Re-Her.
France may soon join a handful of countries with laws aimed at repatriating stolen money and assets to their countries of origin. But anti-corruption watchdogs say the draft legislation needs changes to ensure the assets don't go back to corrupt officials. For VOA News, Lisa Brand reports from Paris.
A luxury townhouse on Avenue Foch, one of Paris's chicest addresses, is caught up in a years-long legal battle between France and Equatorial Guinea. The African nation argues the mansion is part of its diplomatic mission. French prosecutors claim it's owned by Théodorine Obiang, the wealthy son of Equatorial Guinea's longtime leader. So far, France is winning. A Paris court fined the younger Obiang millions of dollars and handed him a suspended prison sentence. The reason? The court said he plundered his nation to finance his luxury lifestyle, a sentence upheld last November by the International Court of Justice in The Hague. French authorities have also seized the 100-room Paris mansion, along with other property, including a fleet of luxury cars. Equatorial Guinea is appealing the case, and France's highest court is expected to examine it shortly. If France wins again, the millions of dollars in assets would normally end up in its public coffers. But a new measure making its way through French Parliament may change that trajectory. If it becomes law, the millions would instead head back to Equatorial Guinea, targeting its majority poor population.
This is the money that was stolen from people that work hard in their country, people that really need this money, and then we need to make sure that it will go back in those countries and use it properly.
Deputy Hervé Berville of the ruling La République En Marche, or LREM party, is helping to sponsor the measure, which was passed last week in France's National Assembly, but still faces a Senate vote.
It's really important to really tell our citizens and the citizens of the world in those countries, in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America, that France and other countries will not allow like dictators or son of dictators to take money that is not their money.
Anti-corruption groups praise the legislation, but they argue some of the language needs strengthening now rather than later, as Deputy Berville promises. Sandra Cossard is director of French NGO Sherpa.
For us, the legislation is not completely adequate to what we were expecting. And especially it's lacking these principles, which are for us, you know, mandatory. That should be transparency, accountability, and also very important, the close participation of civil society in all of the countries involved.
If it becomes law, the legislation could affect other high-profile cases underway here. Among them, that of Rifat al-Assad, uncle of the Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad. A Paris court sentenced him also to prison last year for money laundering and misappropriating public funds to buy luxurious French property. He, too, is appealing his conviction. And the family of conflict-torn Yemen's late president, Ali Abdallah Saleh, targeted in yet another so-called ill-gotten gains investigation here in France.
L'imposition unilatérale du choix des locaux par un état accréditant.
The Obiang trial is years in the making. It started with legal proceedings by Sherpa and fellow anti-corruption watchdog group Transparency International that also targeted the leaders of Gabon and the Republic of Congo. Equatorial Guinean rights activist Tutu Ali Kanté, who fled violence in his homeland 25 years ago, is following the Obiang case closely from North Carolina, where he now lives.
This is a family that for 40 years, for 4 decades, have ruled a country as if it was their own private fiefdom, without any accountability. So the fact that the French have gone as far as taking this case to the Supreme Court, it's very meaningful.
Ali Kanté hopes a final French conviction of Obiang and a new ill-gotten gains law will warn other corrupt leaders from poor countries they could pay heavily for stealing from their people. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
From Paris, we move to Liberia. A former top commander of the Sierra Leone ex-rebel groups, Revolutionary United Front, is on trial in Finland. He is being tried for war crimes and crimes against humanity that he allegedly committed in Liberia while fighting alongside child slavers, rebels from 1999 to 2003. Rita Golby is following the trial in Liberia and has this report.
The court has ruled that all witnesses' identities be protected because of credible fear of intimidation or retaliation. The location of the trial has been kept secret for the same reason. None of the witnesses who testified has been able to establish the exact year the events they described took place. The inconsistencies in testimonies are a challenge for the prosecution team because no evidence or witness testimony has formed a key part of the case. But State Prosecutor Tom Latini says he is confident the consistency of the stories will overwhelm any inconsistencies about dates and which fashion massacre was representing.
There's no question in my mind that the witness statements wouldn't be genuine and that the witnesses wouldn't tell us what they know, and the witnesses are telling us their best knowledge, the truth according to their best knowledge.
But in an interview, defense lawyer Kali Gomoros says the inconsistencies undermine the case against his client. He also says witnesses' repeated references to massacre as injured Gabriel could be interpreted to mean that his client is not the person who committed the alleged crimes.
First, they said that everything happens 2003. And when we start, then everybody said that it was the wrong year. The right year is 2000. So I don't understand how it's possible that everybody said first wrong year. And when they came to court, everybody fixed it.
It is alleged that Massacre committed most of his atrocious crimes in Lofa, one of Liberia's largest counties, and in Monrovia, the capital of the country. Nathan Kwei, a citizen of Lofa, says he sees the trial of Massacre as a gateway to justice for victims of the Liberian Civil War. He says the trial should also affect Liberians who played key roles in the civil crisis.
It should not only be limited to foreign nationals who committed crimes during the Civil War. We should start with our own people that committed mayhem in this country.
Hawanatu County, another resident of Lofa County and a direct victim of the alleged war crimes, says the ongoing trial is good news for Liberians. She says living in the same community with perpetrators and seeing them go unpunished is provoking.
If we just set these people free, not for us now, not for our own generation, but who knows, tomorrow similar thing will happen and they will say, let them go free. So we really love this kind of thing to happen, to discipline, because in any country, if there is discipline, then people will be afraid to commit a crime.
A district commissioner in Lofa County, Abbott Selif, says he wants the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia to bring to justice those who committed havoc in the country.
I will support the war crime court because I'm a victim, because my former president was indicted and he's being incarcerated. So those who have committed mayhem should be brought to book.
Why others are calling for the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia? John Jada, a resident of Monrovia, says the court will be a setback for the gains the country has made so far in reconciliation.
The war crime court will come, but it will affect us in the country, because you and myself will fall into it. Because your brother is part of it, myself, my brother is part of it. Then when I hold you, I say you got to face the court, and my brother too will face the same court.
The testimonies over the last 2 weeks have focused on alleged crimes that took place in 2001, when then-President Charles Taylor's forces were fighting the Liberians United for Reconciliation and Democracy Lord rebels in the Monrovia area. Massacre's forces were allegedly supporting Taylor, but Massacre denies all the charges, claiming he was not in Liberia. Rita Jabwe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
We'd love to hear what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +202-630-8011. We now leave you with the song Todi by Oliver Mutukuzu.
Oh, Todi, what shall we do?
Tingani,
Sinzija.
What shall we do?
We've been listening to Oliver Mutukuzu with the song Todi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others against COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
zvapatumbuka pamuviri pasina raramo.